In today's podcast, I had the pleasure of interviewing Anthony Russell. His journey started in the U.S. Army, where he gained experience as both a follower and a leader. After the military, he invested in real estate and rental properties, and it was clear to him that the existing landlords that he observed were doing it wrong. They had the wrong focus, only on profits, and this in turn led to a poor experience for their tenants. Anthony Russell has developed a unique tenant-first approach to property leadership. This has allowed him to not only keep his tenants happy and in healthy environments, but has also secured a solid bottom line even in hard economic times. His new book, Leadership for Landlords, highlights the approach that he has taken to property leadership and teaches new landlords his way of land leading. Let's listen in as Anthony shares his stories as well as insights into how his military experience helped develop him as a leader and ultimately develop his own style of property leadership.
So my name is Anthony Russell. I am a former United States Army sergeant. I served in the military police corps for a few years, 5 years, and served in Iraq. Anybody that's served in the military knows that we have some of the best leaders that the world has seen. And that's not by any coincidence. They breed everyone right from day one, even if you're not a leader. They breed you right from day one to be a leader. And some of the things that they do to teach people to be leaders is they focus on taking care of others, and that putting yourself last and putting others first, and the team mindset. So I took these things after I got out of the military, and I knew I wanted to get into investing. I knew I wanted to get into real estate investment. I knew that there was a good financial incentive there. So I started doing some research on how a lot of landlords operate, and it really disturbed me that most landlords that I actually, in fact, every landlord that I saw was focused on profits first. Nobody ever talked about tenants first. No one ever talked about, property leadership or having empathy for tenants or landlording as a service. And, it really was odd to me because as a landlord, you are clearly in the service industry. There's no question of it. We provide a service. We provide housing. We provide sometimes appliances. We provide lawn care. We provide all types of things. If a tenant has an issue, they call me and I handle it for them. That's landlording and property management in a nutshell. And that's leadership. That's what that is. So focusing on profits first, in my opinion, is a losing strategy. If you want great profits, then you need to provide a great service. So when I started my business about 11 years ago, this was the approach that I took right from the start. We said that we were going to focus on finding buildings. So we built it literally into every layer of our property management business right from the start. So when we go to search for buildings that we were interested in buying, we targeted buildings that were poorly managed, that were not repaired correctly. And anybody that's bought a building knows that that's where the profits are made. So that worked out well for us. We found, landlords that were either total scumbags or just didn't know what they were doing. And we made them lowball offers and took over their buildings. And then, we come in and we rehab them and we keep the people that are in there. And that presents its own challenges. But, we try and keep the people that are in there and we rehab their units. And the net result is you end up with a great building that you bought below market value with tenants that love you because, you came in and made their life better and you treat them like a person. And what ends up coming out of it is, when you treat tenants with empathy, you end up getting tenants that tell you when things are broken. You get tenants that are concerned about your goals. If you say, hey, my goal is that, we can have this building fully rented and that everybody's happy here and that, there's no drug use or prostitution or whatever. The tenants will fight for those goals for you if they see you care. So that's generally the long and short of it. That's what we did. That's how we built our business. And we've been very successful with it. So I wanted to package this idea because I haven't read about this anywhere. So I wrote the book Leadership for Landlords, and that's what the book is about. The book is about some of the experiences that I've had as a landlord with tenants and with purchasing buildings, and how I took the experiences that I had from the military, both good and bad, and how I've applied those to becoming a better property leader.
Awesome. That's fantastic. By the way, thank you, first of all, for your service. That's awesome.
Thank you.
How many years did you serve?
I was active duty for 5 years, and then I switched over to the Ohio National Guard for about a year and a half. So relatively short contract compared to a lot of my brothers and sisters that are serving. But I served for about 6.5 years total.
Nice. Very cool. I find it interesting that you take these properties or you acquire these properties and then you try to keep the tenants there. Tell me a little bit more about that. How does that work?
Yeah. So we've had some success with that. That is challenging. So anybody that's taken over a building that has tenants in it knows that there are challenges with that, that these tenants, especially in the buildings that we're looking after, the buildings that we've acquired, usually they've had a poor relationship with the property owner. These property owners, you know, they don't send in pest control. They don't, you know, do repairs in a timely manner. They might try and do illegal evictions. You know, these are the type of landlords that we're taking over from. So I have a bit of an onboarding process, which I actually, there's a funny story that I have in the book about a building that I onboarded, and it just totally blew up in my face. I'm happy to share it with you. There was a tenant. So when I take over a building, I usually go through some spiel with like all the tenants. I go to the building right away the day I get the keys, and I introduce myself to the tenants and I say, hey, look, you know, I know things were bad. I know the building's in bad condition. I'm the new owner. I'm here to take care of it. We're going to, you know, rehab the building. You're going to get new appliances. Your life's going to be better. You know, just pay the rent on the first by 5 p.m. and tell me when you have problems. And I promise you that, you know, I will take care of them. And usually that is a really great thing for a lot of people. Like if I had a landlord come to me and tell me that, I'd be like, holy crap, you know, life is going to be awesome.
Oh yeah, that's huge.
Right. Well, I remember it was the first building that we took over in a low income area. It was my first experience with a low income housing. Up to that point, we had only been buying in an A, B neighborhood. So in the low income neighborhoods, you know, you have a lot more like Section 8, things like that, that you deal with, Social Security, things like that, which I had not had any experience with. I just assumed that people paid their rent on time and by their lease, and that's just how it worked. You know, I didn't know any better. So
I mean, that's not how it
I
works?
Took over this. That was not how it worked.
Oh, okay.
So, I went into this building and it's a 4-unit building, and I was going to go through and knock on doors and just introduce myself. I had a little thing printed out that I was going to give to people and just to welcome them and give them my phone number and stuff, you know, because I take calls personally. You know, if tenants got issues, they call me. So the very first door, very first tenant, I knock on the door, this lady, she was a little bit older than me. She answers the door and, you know, I introduced myself. I said, hi, I'm Anthony. You know, I just bought the building. I'm here to take care of everything. And, I want to address any issues you have. If you have anything that's an emergency, let me know. I'll fix it right now. By the way, you know, all you got to do on your end is let me know when there's problems, pay rent on the first by 5 PM and life will be great. And she immediately burst into tears. She just started crying. And I was like, what the heck? You know, like, what did I say? You know, I'm thinking, yeah, I was thrown back by it. I didn't know what to do. So, you know, I said, did I say something wrong? Is it, you know, what's the matter? And she goes, she starts freaking out, you know, oh, you might as well evict me now and this and that. And she had personality disorders. So that was coupled with this issue. But she started freaking out and crying and throwing things and you might as well evict me now and this and that. And I started drilling into it to figure out why she was so upset. And it turned out that she was accepting, she had a handicapped guy living with her, and he was on some type of Social Security program or some type of assistance, federal assistance, and they didn't get paid until the third. So that was when they were paying their rent. And gotcha. You know, I didn't know that at first. I thought she was just trying to pull one over on me. You know, like tenants will sometimes try and pull crap like that, especially when you get a change of command in there, you know? So she told me, she goes, well, I don't have the money. This is what she actually tells me. So I didn't know that at first. This is what she actually tells me. She goes, well, I don't get the money on the first. I get the money on the third, and you're not going to get paid till then. And if you don't like that, then you're going to have to evict me. That's what she tells me.
Sure.
And I said, I'm thinking to myself, who does this lady think I am? You know, she thinks I'm an idiot. You know, she thinks that she's going to pull the wool over my eyes. So, of course, natural Army sergeant, I poured a little fuel on the fire. Why not? And I told her, I said, you know, look, your lease, I've already reviewed all your leases. I know what the lease says. The lease says first by 5 p.m. That's also my policy, and that's what we're going to do. And if you can't do that, then yeah, we will have to have a different conversation. And, you know, that obviously made things infinitely worse. So I stopped and I stepped back from the situation. I removed my ego out of it, my emotion out of it. And I said to myself, you know, clearly something is wrong here. This, even with a tenant that's trying to pull the wool over my eyes, like this doesn't make sense. So I started drilling in and asking her, and that was how I came to, that they were actually on some type of government assistance and that this was like a real problem. And, immediately I said, you know what? I totally get it. That's fine. You know, don't worry. The third is fine. When we renew your lease, I will build that into the lease. That will be reflected in the lease. And then we'll go from there. And, you know, and if that's a problem, then we'll have a different conversation. But I told her, I said, look, don't worry. You know, it's going to be fine.
And to clarify, this was your first time dealing with somebody who was on this type of rental assistance where it didn't come into the third or whatever. Gotcha. So I was like,
yeah,
sure,
this is the first time. Oh yeah. Yeah. And we did have other tenants after that, since that time, we've had other, you know, like Section 8 and, different types of, government subsidies. And, we handle them just, as you would expect. You know, we don't treat those people any different. You know, they pay the rent when they can and when they get the money in, but we do hold them to a standard. So, it's not like we just say pay whenever you want, you know?
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that.
So I just want to be clear. I have never had a problem with a tenant that has been on Section 8 or on some type of subsidy. Those tenants are usually decent people. I haven't had any issues. I have found that it doesn't matter if somebody's on a subsidy or if they're paying their rent from their paycheck. If they're a nasty person, they're going to be a nasty person.
That's a good clarification to make, because I think there's a misconception when people hear the word rental assistance that they automatically tend to, and unfortunately, associate that with, oh, well, that's a tenant I don't want on my property, for whatever reason, whatever those misconceptions or preset notions may be.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have tenants across the whole gambit that, you know, some are on subsidies, some aren't. And it really comes down to your screening. If you don't want nasty people, if you don't want people that aren't going to pay rent on time or destroy your stuff, then you need to screen them better. It has nothing to do with their assistance or non-assistance.
Sure.
But yeah, that's absolutely why I want to clarify that, because I have heard that narrative again and again and again. I don't want to rent to Section 8. They destroy your property. I don't take subsidies or whatever. That's just absolutely factually false. If people are saying that, you need to correct them. That's the wrong attitude to have. Those programs are there for a reason. And there are people that abuse them for sure, but there's also a huge subset of people that don't abuse them and that actually need that assistance. We have one couple that I won't name them because they're still active tenants, but they're good people. They were actually homeless when they came into we took them in. They were homeless up until they came to us. And they pay rent on time. They're always, I mean, I think in the last 3 years, they were late once. You know, they're very good people. So take that chance. But sure. That was my first experience with dealing with any type of federal subsidy. And the way that we handle that is we make sure we identify it up front. That's the first thing. Before we get them in there, because I don't want some surprise, like when I go to sign the lease that, hey, by the way, you got to wait till the third to get your money. I want to know these things up front. So during the interview process, when we're actually interviewing people for apartments, we go through and we just check the block and we ask people, you know, do you have a W-2 or can you provide a W-2? And usually that'll root out people, or not root them out, but that'll illuminate people that, you know, are using subsidies or whatever. And we don't turn people away for that. We turn people away for more common things like, can you afford the rent? Can you, you know, do you have bankruptcies in the last, 6 months or a year? Or, you know, when's the last time you were evicted? Things like that. That's what we go over. And if you stick to a good vetting process, then you'll get good people.
Does your vetting process change based on your property, or is it pretty consistent across the board for all properties? How does that work?
So we, I do go over this in the book. I keep a standard. It doesn't matter where you're at. I keep a standard. The only thing that changes based on the location is how I actually show the apartment. Everything else remains the same. And that's to protect against any type of like discrimination lawsuit or because look, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know every law that's out there. And I'm sure that if I wasn't careful, I could absolutely most people would fall into some type of discrimination if they're not careful. So the way that we avoid discrimination and equal opportunity lawsuits is we treat everybody exactly the same. And our leasing policies are exactly the same. It doesn't matter if you're making $100,000 a year or $20,000 a year. The only thing that actually changes is how we show. So in our A and B class neighborhoods, we tend to do half hour increments. Like I'll line people up in half hour increments and show them in a first come first serve kind of basis. And then for the low income area, I tend to do it more like an open house. And that's just because people, I'll get like 50 appointments and only 10 people show up. So I don't want to drive out there a million times.
You mentioned something about an onboarding process. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So everything that I do has a process. It doesn't matter if it's searching for buildings. It doesn't matter if it's leasing, acquiring a building and onboarding tenants, evictions, everything. Which by the way, I heard your episode on illegal evictions and it was pretty hilarious. I've never heard taking the door off. That was a new one to me. But
it's pretty crazy what people do out there, man.
Oh yeah. I'm willing to bet there's a million scenarios like that I've never heard of, but follow the laws. Dear Lord, just follow the laws. But yeah, we have a process for everything, especially for onboarding. It just makes it makes the transfer a lot easier when you have a plan. What do they tell us in the Army? Plan to fail to plan and plan to fail. That was what it was. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So and it doesn't have to be a complex plan. Like we're not, making rocket fuel over here. You know, we're taking a building over and we're letting the tenants know that, hey, you got someone new to help you with stuff. When I get the keys very first day, I go and I onboard the tenants. Usually that is leaving some type of flyer on their door or introducing myself if I actually see them, which I try to do. Usually it's leaving a flyer on their door and it says, hey, this is who I am. This is what just happened. Here's my phone number. Please text me your email address so we can onboard you into our rental system. And then from there, I'll include a couple standard rules that, I apply to all of our properties. I make sure that they know that nobody's getting evicted. That's a key one. Most tenants do not understand that. And I will say most, like 99% of tenants do not understand, at least in our state, in Ohio, that when I take over a building, like I'm legally required to follow the lease that's in place. So I have no reason to evict them. I don't want to. I bought a cash flowing building for a reason. I want the cash flow. So that's usually the first thing I do, though, is I get in communication with them. I get them pulled into our electronic system for rent payment and leasing. I answer any questions so that they understand how to submit, repair requests or to communicate with me. I make sure they understand they're not getting evicted. If I plan on raising any rent, I usually have that conversation with them right away. I don't have any rule of thumb around raising rent. I usually try not to, unless the person is egregiously low. Like if I took over one building and the market rent was like $700 for their unit and they were paying $250, obviously I'm going to raise their rent.
Yeah.
But if it's within 10 or 15%, usually we'll just let it go for one lease cycle or whatever. And just to see if the person's a good fit. And then either we'll bring them up to market value or they'll end up leaving the property and I'll raise the rent for the next person. But that's generally what our onboarding is. It's a pretty simple process, but we do have a process in place.
Sure. Well, and I like that you put in there that in that notice or whatever you give to people that you're not getting evicted, at least not right now, because a lot of people, whenever there's, well, because people just don't understand real estate in general. And they think sometimes that when a property is acquired by a new owner and it goes through a transaction of some sort, that some people just automatically assume that they have to move out for whatever reason. It's the strangest thing. And so for somebody buying their first property for the first time that has existing renters, that's important. That's an important detail, in my opinion, that you just brought up, that you specifically include in there, like, hey, you're not getting evicted. Like, I'm not here to evict you. I didn't buy the property to kick you out. That's not the goal. And so that's an important
communication is key.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point that you brought up. And a lot of states do require that. And I think it might even be every state that when a property is acquired and it's a rental property, that you have to provide the existing tenants with some type of notice of who the new owner is, what the contact information is for whoever they need to be able to reach out to pay rent, communicate regarding maintenance issues, et cetera. So
I'm willing to bet that most states probably require that you honor the leases that are in place as well. I don't want to say that's for every state because I don't know, but I'm willing to bet it's most states.
For sure. Yeah, I would imagine so. And I'm assuming you put some of the, you mentioned that you have processes for everything. And I'm assuming that your book has some of these processes included in there. Is that an accurate assumption?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yes. We cover some of the processes around onboarding. Like I said, that story is in there. And we cover emergency planning. Like we recently had the COVID crisis, you know, how did we manage our way through that? And yeah, there's absolutely some information around the processes in there.
What would you say is one of the most difficult elements of being a successful landlord who leads or has leadership qualities as a landlord?
So it's really hard to... So there's actually a couple different difficulties. So me personally, me as a person, my difficulty is, you know, I came from the military where... you know, everything was, I gave an order. And though we had this empathetic relationship between me and my soldiers, and I knew that they wanted to accomplish my goals, I still, you know, it's you give an order, you know, they're going to follow it. If it's a legal order, they're going to follow it because that's how the military works. That's how we built it, you know.
Sure.
Whereas with tenants, they don't have to follow anything you ask them to do. You know, they can tell you to pound sand. So... that is very challenging. And that's a big reason why I wrote this book, because I know a lot of landlords are challenged with communication with their tenants. And I guess if you really had to summarize this book, I would say it's a book about communication. I'm trying to show through the book that if you can be empathetic toward your tenants and you can appreciate them as people and not as like a money tree that you shake and get C notes out of, that, you know, they're going to want to support your mission. They're going to want to support your goals. If you, like, I show up to every one of my properties every single weekend. I make my face seen. Even if I don't see my tenants, they might see my car out there. They know I'm there every weekend. We have multi-unit buildings. I go through and check the water heaters, check the furnaces, make sure there's nothing blowing up in the basement. We make sure the grass is cut weekly, things like that, you know. I'm not pounding on everybody's door, but if they see me, I say, hey, how's it going? You know, is there anything I can do for you? How is everything all right in your apartment? And when you do that, tenants are going to say, wow, this guy actually cares. He cares about his property. He cares about his tenants. He wants to make sure that we're good to go. And guess what? When, you know, the tenant next door to them is, you know, snorting a line of cocaine or has, you know, hookers walking in and out, they're going to say something to you. You know, or if they go into the basement and they see 6 feet of water, they're going to say something to you. They're not just going to ignore that. And that's really what we're striving for here. We're striving for building that relationship with your tenants so that when things go sideways, you know, you have eyes and ears on the ground. They're going to say, hey, there's something that doesn't look right here. It needs your attention, instead of being surprised a month down the road, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And that's a problem that a lot of landlords have is where tenants don't say things for months on end. And it's a problem that has a compound effect where it just continues to get worse and worse.
Absolutely.
And then it festers. And then, you have all kinds of problems down the road because you never knew there was an issue to begin with. And so that's an interesting perspective, that by building these relationships, not just sending out a letter saying, hey, if something's wrong in your apartment, make sure you tell me, but you're actually building a relationship proactively to where your tenants Absolutely. Actually care about you as an individual, as an owner, and your investment and your goals, and say, hey, something is causing damage. You need to know about it. That's an interesting perspective.
And it helps also because you're keeping on top of repairs. You know, you want to stay on top of repairs, because if the repairs add up, you know, then you're going to get blindsided by, you know, a $10,000 bill because you didn't, you know, keep up with all these repairs in this apartment. So if your tenants are letting you know when stuff is coming in, great, get out there and fix it, you know, get on top of it. And then it's easy. You know, what you got a one leaky pipe this weekend, you got a leaky faucet next weekend, you know, it's not a big deal. Whereas if you let it compile or compound, you got 50 things all at once, everybody's unhappy, nobody wants to pay rent. It pays off in dividends for sure.
So how do you approach maintenance with your properties to where you have that balance where tenants are happy, you're not installing gold plated toilet seats, but you're also maintaining the property efficiently?
So this is something that I'm sure most landlords struggle with, is, you know, repairs, to do it yourself, to hire somebody, how does that fit into, you know, your budget and things like that. We do a mixture of both. This has obviously been a struggle for us over the years. When I first started in real estate, I mostly hired out my contracting work. And then about halfway through, about 5-6 years in, I said, you know what, this is just too expensive. I need to learn how to do this. So I moved over to the exact opposite end where I did everything. And then that was taking up all my time, and I kind of bought myself a job, and I didn't want to do that. So now I'm somewhere in the middle where really specialty items, I will farm out to contractors, like if it's an HVAC unit or a water heater, actually even water heater sometimes I'll do. Usually gas, or, well, always gas. I will never do gas lines. But gas lines, electric, anything past the fixture, like if it's a light fixture, I'll put it in. If it's an outlet or an electrical plug, I'll put it in. But anything beyond that, I usually farm it out, because I don't want to mess with electric. I don't want to get shocked. The roof, things that, you know, really require a specialty to know what you're doing, I'll farm those things out. The rest I do myself. I think the key, though, isn't really how you hand. It isn't the last step. That's the last step. Is getting the actual work done is the last step. The first step is identifying the problem and identifying it quick and getting on top of it quick. So, you know, like I said, my tenants, they have my phone number. My phone's sitting right next to me. I could call right now. I'd be off this, you know, meeting, and I'd be out there helping them. The second they call me, I'm on it. If it's something I can do, or if I don't know what the situation is, I'm over there immediately, identify the situation, I figure out what needs to happen, and then we put it in motion. Either I'll get a contractor on the schedule and we get them out there and we get it fixed, or I'll schedule some time this coming weekend to fix it myself. The main things you want to do, though, is get there quick, identify what's actually wrong, and stop any damage, any active damage, if it's like water pouring in or something. Everything after that is the easy part, you know, just scheduling the contractor, figuring out when you're going to do it yourself.
Sure. And well, just out of curiosity, what's your typical turnaround time for, let's say, just your average maintenance request?
So our worst case scenario, like, I mean, this was like the world is melting down. I had a tenant call me at 3 a.m. So I'm up at 4 usually. So this wasn't that big of a deal for me, but okay. She called me at 3 a.m. and said, hey, Anthony, and mind you, this is a really nice old grandmother, very nice lady. She said, hey, I just want to let you know that my bedroom ceiling, part of it caved in and there's water pouring in. Oh, yeah, no. It was kind of a big deal. We were having a bad storm that night. Yeah. We were having a bad storm that night, and she lived on the top floor, and the flat top roof of right above her apartment had blown up, and the wind had ripped it right up, and water was pouring in down the wall on top of her ceiling. The ceiling caved in. It was kind of a big deal. Didn't matter what time it was. You know, I got my phone, I got my tools, we got in the car. I was over there 45 minutes later. I was, you know, in her apartment, figuring out what was going on, creating a plan of action. Immediately I told her, I said, hey, look, if you could stay here in the living room or in a different bedroom, I would appreciate it. But if you want to go to an apartment or to a, not an apartment, to a hotel, I'll take care of you for today and tomorrow. We'll get this fixed for you. You know, don't worry about it. So right off the bat, boom, I figure out what the problem is. I take care of the tenant. That's the first thing. Second thing was, I said, okay, I've got two issues here. We've got the roof, obviously is jacked up, needs fixed. I don't know anything about roofing, so I got to get a contractor on that. Same exact time, I see the bedroom ceiling has caved in. You know, it's a drywall ceiling, so you can't leave water moisture in there. So I got the tenant's stuff out of that room. It's only a 100 square foot room, so it wasn't a ton of stuff. But I got the tenant's stuff out of the room, and we started demo on that room immediately to get that waterlogged stuff out of there. Once that was all out of there, I was able to get the roof fixed that same day. And then I scheduled a contractor to come in for the next day to put her ceiling back up and get it painted and plastered. I think our total turnaround time on that was about 72 hours. And that's from the time that she called me to the time that we were taking her stuff and putting it back in there. And I also bought her a new mattress because her mattress was a little wet after that. So,
wow, that's 72
everything
hours.
Worked out.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that was probably the craziest thing I've ever. Now, I know there's probably a lot of new landlords out there, a lot of people thinking of getting into landlording, and they're like, oh my God, you know, how would I handle that? And that's, I mean, you should be asking yourself that because that's a real scenario.
Sure.
But at the same time, I've been doing this for 11 years. That's the first time that's ever happened to me. I could probably count on literally one hand, on a couple fingers, how many times I've been called in the middle of the night. And I think a big part of that is because I keep up with our repairs. That was a totally black swan event. We had the building inspected. We thought the roof was in good condition. It just happened to rip up at that time. Like, things happen sometimes. Sure. You know, you can't plan for everything. It wasn't a
huge
amount of money.
Yeah, that's a pretty gnarly incident.
Oh, it was nasty. So nasty. Yeah,
what would you say was one of the most difficult things that you had to learn over the years of being in property management that really would stand out to you? Maybe it's something that you touch on in your book that people could really learn from.
Something that is very challenging for a lot of people. I was fortunate enough to figure this out really quick, but it was difficult to learn. You have to be professional at all times. You have to. And when I say be professional at all times, I mean, look, you're going to have, if you're getting into this business, you need to understand you're going to have tenants to cry. It's going to happen. You're going to have to deliver bad news at some point. I've had many situations, both the tenant's fault and not the tenant's fault, that I've had to deliver bad news before. They're going to cry in your face. They're going to beg you to change your decision. They're going to call you names. I had a tenant a couple weeks ago just call me an MF-er because, you know, and it was something total miscommunication. You know, I was doing something for them and, to better them and their life and the building. And they thought that I was encroaching on their space and I wasn't. And I explained that to them and they apologized afterward. But, you know, we're all human. You're going to have people that have all different types of life situations going on. You have to remain professional. You have to be the one that is that takes the higher road. That's the bigger adult. When they cry in your face, you know, you stay emotionless. You just stick to your mission, stick to your decisions. But also, stick to your decisions, but keep an open ear. Okay. So like I said, with that one tenant that, was upset about the rent being in on time. I stuck to my decision at first, but then I stepped back and I said, wait, hang on. There might be something bigger here that I need to focus on. So, I was open to listening to the tenant, but look, you should not be swearing at your tenants. You should not be having beers with your tenants. You should not be, out back smoking and joking with them. You know, you need to keep a professional relationship.
Wait, I can't have a beer with my tenants.
I would not recommend it. I would not recommend it. I lived with my tenants for years. I, I house hacked for the first 5 or 6 years of my landlording. So I lived in the buildings with them, and I still was able to maintain that professional distance. It's okay to be friendly with them. It's okay to engage in friendly conversation and things. But at the end of the day, I promise you, if you are not professional, they will use it as leverage. It will come back to bite you. It will either come back to bite you because somebody throws something in your face or embarrasses you when you're trying to rent out the next unit, or it could come back to bite you in court. I've had tenants record me before trying to catch me saying something that I shouldn't be saying. Or doing something I shouldn't be doing, but you know, I have processes in place and I remain professional. So those situations were never an issue, but they very easily could have been. And I'm sure that they are for a lot of people. If I had to offer any advice to anybody in this business or looking to get into this business, that's the key. It's a business, you know, run it as a business. You are the captain of the ship. You're the commander in charge. The buck stops with you. You know, be professional right from the start. You know, if you remain professional and you set clear boundaries, you're going to have a good time with your tenants. They're going to pay on time. They're going to let you know when they can't pay on time. You're going to be able to work around those issues a lot more with a lot more agility than if but let's look at it from the other angle. Okay. Let's say you go in there and you're a total jerk. You know, do you think they're going to call you and be like, hey, I need an extra day or two? No, they're not going to say anything. They're just going to let you, you know, figure it out when the rent isn't in. It pays dividends to just treat people like humans.
If there was one thing that you think that I have not asked that is of utmost importance or is of most relevance to the topics that we've been discussing, such as leadership for landlords, what is that one thing that you would want to leave to the listeners who are completely engaged and engrossed with the topics that we've been discussing throughout the past 40 some minutes?
Man, I would say there's just a better way to be a landlord. You know, I specifically want to coin the phrase property leader because that's what this is. It's not about making a quick buck. And if you think that's what it is and you're listening to this, you're wrong. You're 100% wrong. It's not about making a quick buck. It is an investment, but it's a service first. It is absolutely a service first. We have people that are suffering in this country and around the world because, you know, they've got some slummy jerk off that's, you know, their landlord and they're not treating them right. You know, we've had tenants that live, when we've taken buildings over, they've been living with roaches and fleas. We've had all types of crazy things, bed bugs and it's not like the landlords didn't know, they just didn't care. And that's the wrong answer. And I think that's the main thing that's the message I want to deliver to people, is that if you're getting into this business, treat people right. That's the right way to be. You'll sleep better at night and you'll make a buck.
I definitely appreciate all of those insights and the stories that you have shared with us. I found the stories completely fascinating, and I know that listeners find those stories equally fascinating. It's always interesting to hear stories from other landlords and property managers and all the crazy stuff and how you dealt with it and how to be a leader as a landlord.
Thank you so much.